Hey, this is Adam Sorensen, politics producer at Time.com. Welcome back to The Call, a weekly conversation with Time's political reporters on what they've been working on and the latest from Washington. Joining me this week are Michael Scherer and Kate Pickard.
I'm curious to hear from both of you about this Shirley Sherrod case, because, Kate, you wrote an interesting piece on the long history Sherrod has with the USDA and how this is much more than the case of someone merely being fired, raises a whole lot of issues. And Michael, I'm interested in your perspective. From the White House's point of view, this whole situation brings up this issue of race that Obama handled in a very interesting way during the campaign, but they've seemed to struggle with at times during the administration. How does the White House view this? How do they deal with race going forward? And what does this mean for them?
Yeah, I think race is one part of this, and I think you accurately described the importance of it for the administration. I mean, during the campaign, he gave a speech on race in which he promised basically to deal with these issues head on going forward. And since he's been in the White House, I think it's fair to say that for the most part, the president and his advisors have seen race as a distraction, a road they don't want to go down. They've tried to avoid it as much as possible. At the same time, I think the other instructing thing about this episode is that the White House is still a little off kilter and not sure how to deal with attacks from the conservative press. Anita Dunn comes in last year, at the end of the first year, and tries to improve how the communications shop deals with attacks. And a big part of that has to do with being more muscular, being more responsive, not letting these things drag on and sort of build momentum over time. What you saw in this instance was that sensitivity of these attacks was so high that that everybody over-responded. And, you know, the president, who likes to go out and talk about how he doesn't pay attention to these distracting media games that are played, in the press, was basically caught with an administration that panicked over a media game. And it just shows how they still have yet to figure out how to really deal with this. They're either overreacting or underreacting.
Why are they thin-skinned?
Because I think they feel like they've been burned by it. They were convinced all of last year that that if it were not for the misinformation going out about healthcare, for instance, through a lot of these same channels, the death panels, et cetera, then the polls would be very different. And so they always thought, so their solution at the end of last year was, we have to treat this more like a battle. You know, I think the other thing, which Kate could probably talk about, is that Vilsack is very sensitive to a lot of these issues, and that was overlaying it on already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting, though, because, you know, I think everything you're saying is right, Michael, and I know that Anita Dunn had that, you know, big push, before she left. To be more muscular and stand up more to the, kind of conservative press, although that's, not what they did in this case. They didn't say, wait, no drama, Obama, hold on, like, let's go look at this before we make any rash decisions and let's fight back, which they could have done, obviously, in hindsight. And instead, they just caved and tried to move forward. So I think you're right that they...
To be clear, the Anita Dunn prescription was not always fight no matter what. It was fight hard on the things that we're going to win on and cut bait, when we need to. It was, it wasn't like she didn't come in saying that, we just deny everything and we fight to the end. It
was,
we have to be very aggressive about figuring out what's going on, quickly reacting, taking a stand and sticking with that stand.
I wonder what she thinks about this whole episode.
Well, they failed. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
the initial evaluation, everyone says, was bungled.
And they're not monolithic on this either, because there was actually a leak from the Obama inner circle. They were talking to Ben Smith about Jim Messina praising them for their quick response.
Right. And, that was actually a very interesting leak because it's a very rare leak. Those meetings happen every day. I mean, maybe I've heard things in sort of private conversations about what goes on in those meetings, but I can't really remember, quotes being leaked from a communications meeting in the West Wing in this administration. So I think that was pretty notable.
What you said about Vilsack is right. If this had been an employee in any other department in the federal government, it would have been far less interesting. What makes it interesting in that it's the USDA is the USDA has a very long and very dark history of deep discriminatory practices that actually have resulted in the largest civil rights class action settlement in history. And so many of those cases are still unresolved, and they're kind of left over from the 80s and 90s, but they're still unresolved. And so Vilsack came into office, and one thing at the top of his agenda, which he gave interviews about and he spoke publicly about, was trying to resolve the racial discrimination cases from the past, and to kind of, you know, chart a new path forward, and to kind of turn the page on that. So I think perhaps his, you know, heightened sensitivity over race issues caused him to react with such haste and you know, such a misguided way.
Barring this incident, you know, up until now, has Vilsack had success settling some of these issues and changing the way the USDA does business?
Well, they did do one thing that Obama promised that he, I think, campaigned on in the South, and that he tried to deliver, which was to allocate another $1 billion to settle claims for black farmers who'd sued the USDA because they were discriminated against. The USDA and the administration have been pushing for this $1 billion, and the Department of Justice reached a settlement with the claimants, but they can't actually get the money unless Congress approves it, and Congress has yet to approve this extra $1 billion in funding. So there's a little bit of politics mixed up with this case, and no, it's not completely resolved. There are still as many as tens of thousands of black farmers who've essentially won their case but haven't gotten any payout from the federal government. So he's definitely got work to do.
Interesting. Well, going back to damage control, the White House has been dealing all week with this kind of outcry over the notion that Elizabeth Warren might not get this job as head of the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Michael, you wrote a bit about that. I'm just curious, you know, why has she become the expected pick? Why would she validate all these liberal needs about financial regulation if she were to get the job? And the White House, has their hand really been forced here? Can they pick someone else at this point?
The reason she's front and center is that she has been throughout the entire financial reform debate, and Timothy Geithner said this at a breakfast I went to yesterday with a number of reporters, the sort of most public spokesperson in America for this kind of consumer financial reform. The idea of the agency that she may head, if she's picked, it, you know, was hers. She created this whole idea, and then she has become a very effective spokesperson for it, both sort of behind closed doors in Washington and on The Daily Show, or, you know, the many other talk shows she does. On top of that, progressives trust that she has no sympathy, because she's really never demonstrated much, for, you know, the sort of traditional concerns of banks, because she has been actively, as an activist on the outside, as a professor, as a writer, campaigning against these institutions. I mean, she tried for years to negotiate agreements that would bring more transparency to credit card fees and things like that, and it never worked with the banks, so she's become much more vocal over time. So there was this campaign that was mounted, and it's been actually, it's clear that the progressive community writ large, including, you know, the Center for American Progress and the various union groups and some of the other groups, decided to turn this into a full-throated campaign, you know, with online petitions, with lots of writings all over the progressive media about why she has to be picked. A lot of this was sparked by an anonymous quote in a Huffington Post story a week ago that's been denied both by the White House and by the Treasury Department, that suggested Treasury Secretary Geithner was against Warren for the job. On to the second part of your question, does Obama have a choice? Can he pick somebody else? I think he can. I think if he, you know, he could deal with a lot of the blowback that would come from it. You know, there's probably other ways they could go about it that would give her some sort of position, so she could still play a role in this, but not maybe be the head of the agency. My question is what incentive he would have to do that. It seems to me, and this is just speculation, that it's not a bad pick for him. I mean, if anything, he gets a confirmation fight in the Senate, which is basically, you know, in lame duck session right now, which would be good for his base, which would put Republicans and, you know, maybe a few moderate Dems on the side of the Chamber of Commerce at a time when that's the message he still wants to be pushing. So it's not clear to me that they don't want to pick her. I think the White House is pretty honest when it says they're pretty early in this process and they haven't gotten so far. I was told this week both that the White House believes she is confirmable, even though Senator Chris Dodd, the guy who shepherded this legislation, said maybe not, and that she has yet to be interviewed. You know, one interesting thing that someone involved in this told me, which we actually put in the magazine this week, is that one of the big concerns of Warren in this process has been that whoever you pick, you know, whether it's me or whether it's somebody else, we have to make sure that that person can attract the talent that we need to staff this agency. It's a bureau of however many hundreds of employees. It's going to be stood up more or less out of nothing. Some part of the Fed is going to move into this. There are some regulatory agencies that will move into this. But but they need to staff something from zero, and they're going to need to be able to attract a lot of real talent to do this. And so her message has been, whoever you pick, make sure it's someone who can actually get this. If you pick someone who's sort of, you know, just a bureaucrat who hasn't worked in this world, that person may not be able to build an agency that's as strong as the administration seems to want.
Thank you, guys. I've taken enough of your valuable time.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
For more political news and analysis, head over to time.com/politics. Once again, I'm Adam Sorensen, and this is The Call. Tune in next week.